the number one hit music station. More music, more variety. Welcome to The Alternative. Playing today's new country. Oh, sorry, I was just practicing. I'm Matt from Matt Fogarty Voiceovers. I know you want to listen to your podcast, so I'm going to keep this super brief. If you're a program director and you're looking for a fresh sound on your station, hit me up. I'll do a free, no-obligation sample for you, and you can get a really good sense for how I'll sound on your station. Get in touch at mattfogartyvo.com. I'm seriously sitting by my computer hitting refresh right now. Email me. Do it.
The Sound Off Podcast. The podcast about broadcast with Matt Kundle. Starts now.
Rob Walsh is the president of podcaster relations at Libsyn, one of the biggest and first podcast hosting companies. They built their clientele through community and trust. And you can hear that company culture come to life on the company's flagship podcast, The Feed, which is hosted by Rob and community manager Elsie Escobar every 2 weeks. And they answer questions about podcasting, and it's on my list of top five podcasts you should listen to if you want to learn more about podcasting. Rob was on this show back in 2018, and he's one of a collection of guests I could just bring back once a year just to talk about what's new in the business. Rob's presentation at Podcast Movement in August was one of the best. He talked a lot about the marketing myths about podcasting, and he's going to steer us through those truth and rumors behind all that podcast advice that is tossed about on the internet today. Rob Walsh joins me from Nashville, Tennessee.
Podcast Movement was good. Had a good time. The attendance was lower than in previous years, but it was higher than I expected it to be, given I had been at an event in Nashville a couple weeks earlier that was normally 10,000 people, Summer NAMM, and it was less than 2,000. So less than one-fifth the turnout. And so Podcast Movement was about 1,200, 1,300 versus 3,000. So maybe a little bit more than a third. So from that perspective, it was well attended, given everything in this current crazy environment.
Now, you didn't have to travel far to go there because I think you've relocated to the area.
Yeah, I'm in Nashville now. So, and in my new studio, as you saw, which my wife was giving me grief when I was building this. And I said, honey, we live in Nashville. You can build a studio in your house. It's okay.
What was preventing you before in Kansas City?
The space to do it. I didn't have this house when I bought it. I was able to get an office with a room off of it, which was 9x10, that I could turn into a studio.
I couldn't join you for Podcast Movement in the room. Would have had to go Toronto, Chicago, Nashville, and I thought that might be a little bit too much for me. So I took in your presentation online, and it was quite extensive. I mean, you showed up with a lot of slides and did a lot of explaining about a lot of things that we're going to talk about today in this podcast, but safe to say it was well received.
It was. I got really good feedback on it. Even heads of one of the movie studios was there at the presentation, and got to talk with them afterwards, and they enjoyed the session. For some, it was an eye-opener. As always, for many people, it helps put things in perspective. That's what I try to do with the sessions, try to break down some myths and talk about, hey, there was, one of the trends that I found that was the most interesting one when I was doing the research for the session was that there was a dip in the number of active podcasts. It actually had dipped and it kept dipping, matter of fact, all the way through the end of August, where in April, we were at a peak of what I call active podcasts, is ones that have 10 episodes or more and have released something in the last 90 days. In April, that peaked at around 425,000. By the end of August, that number had dropped down to 275,000.
Why is it that people will, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to go record some music. I'm going to be a superstar. But when it comes to podcasting, they say, there's a lot of podcasts out there. I don't think I'm going to be able to compete with the 2.4 million podcasts that are out there.
Well, that's the point. It's not 2.4. Active, 275,000. If you take any number of episodes on the feed, it's still under 500,000. That's a lot lower number. Unfortunately, people count in that 2.4 million, the million plus dead shows on Anchor, which you can't really count them. Those are shows where people came in, created one episode like, hey, I'm recording. Is this working? Hey, mom, can you hear me? And that was their whole episode. And they never released another episode. But the feed is still active. So people count that. And I, one of the things I tried to say in the session was don't count the 2.4 million from Apple or Spotify's 2.7 or 2.9 or Podcast Index is 4 million or whatever it is. Those numbers are so overinflated. When you look at the reality, it's less than 500,000 active podcasts out there. That's your competition. And that number is tiny compared to the 750 million blogs that are out there.
Do you think there's anything we can do to get rid of the one and dones?
I've talked to a couple of people that run different aggregator apps, and they've thought about putting in an anchor rule, which is basically if you have an anchor show that's five or less episodes and hasn't released anything in 90 days, it just takes it out of the directory, which I think would be great. That would definitely clear up a lot of the clutter. Unfortunately, it's a bad user experience for listeners. You go in, you search for a title, and you get eight podcasts with that title, and seven of them are dead. That's not what we want as a podcast industry to be putting out forth to listeners. That doesn't endear listeners to this medium. You go into Netflix, you find a show. It's actually a show. Unfortunately, podcasting is getting being known as, you know, a graveyard of dead podcasts.
A lot of people say, should I start my podcast on Anchor? And I say, would you build your business on a cemetery?
Control it. Have real control of your show and be at a place where people can take you seriously.
My crazy idea, which, you know, is not necessarily practical for people at Apple, and that's every year have a renewal email that shows up that says, are you still podcasting? You know, is there somebody at the other end here and a reason why we should keep this podcast going? If you reply yes, you get to stay for another year. If not, you should go in the garbage. But I know I'm not here to tell Apple how to do their business.
You know, there are podcasts that haven't released episodes in 7, 8, 9 years that absolutely should be in there. History of Rome, perfect example, right? He got through the History of Rome. The show gets 500,000 downloads a month. He hasn't released anything new in 7 or 8 years. Still as relevant today as it was 8 years ago, right? So there are definitely podcasts that have ended that still need to be in there. But most, if they've done one or two episodes and haven't done anything in 2 years, 6 months, probably should not be in there.
One of the things that really plagues commercial radio are the doggy commands and the number of times you tell people to be there and text now to win and, you know, all this instructional stuff. But podcasting has one of its own, and that's please rate and review the podcast. Why do we continually ask people to rate and review the podcast when it really doesn't do much other than present a little social check mark?
There is bad advice that's been, that is the bad advice that's gone through this industry for so many years, because people thought that if you rate and review your show, it helped you in the rankings, which it does not. The rankings in Apple Podcasts are based on how many new subscribers, which now Apple calls followers, you've had in the last 7 days with a weighted average for 24, 48, and 72 hours. But it's not about ratings and reviews. Unfortunately, some Uber marketers clashed on that and said, hey, I can give this advice. And there was a screen back in iTunes way back when it was like, what's hot or something like that. And that had part of the algorithm was rating and reviews, but it didn't have any relevance for new and noteworthy. It didn't have any relevance for the top rankings. As a matter of fact, new and noteworthy is kind of gone other than for some of the key, the main page. So unfortunately, this advice keeps percolating through. And the reality is, who even looks at ratings and reviews when you're looking at a podcast? You look at what your friends told you to go listen to, and you go listen to it. You don't look at the ratings and reviews. You're not buying an air fryer, right? This isn't where you're spending money. It's free. And Apple has really changed how they want you to look at podcasts now. In the past, it was a big button when you found a show, and it said subscribe. Now that big button when you find a show is listen to the latest episode. And really, if you want to do something for your podcast, make sure the first 30 seconds, 60 seconds of your podcast has good content, because that 30 seconds of your most recent episode, that first 30 seconds is the most important 30 seconds you have ever created. And unfortunately, people start stitching ads in the pre-roll. And now the first thing people hear when they click listen to the latest episode is an ad for Harry's Razors or Warby Parker. And it's like, that's not the best foot forward.
Tell me a little bit about the new 14.5 app. Apple made a lot of changes to it. And structurally for podcasters, one of the things we have to stop doing is asking people to subscribe, because that button has been replaced by follow.
Right. And it's really hard to find. It's up in the upper right. It's a little checkbox. again, Apple has really changed what they want listeners to do. It's no longer they're trying to convince them to follow the show. You as a listener or as a podcaster really have to tell your listener where to go and how to follow, because it's not as intuitive as it was prior to 14.5. You know, 14.4 and earlier, you search for a podcast, you found it, you came to that page, there was a big subscribe button. Now Apple doesn't even call it subscribe because they don't want you to get confused with the fact they're now selling subscriptions, which started after 14.5. Now they want you to click follow, which kind of maybe because it's hidden up in that right with a little tiny button. They really, again, as I said, the big action Apple wants, they just want people to listen to the podcasts. And as a podcaster, you really want people to click follow because that's what helps you in the rankings. So you have to educate your listeners on here's where to go in 14.5 to click follow. And you know, if you haven't listened to a podcast, and this is where you're going to have an edit point because I'm going to pull up one here.
Edit.
In the upper right, there's a plus symbol and you have to click that plus. And once it becomes a check mark, then it's set up to follow. And if it's a check mark, that also means it's set up to auto download. So that's what you're trying to tell your listeners to do. Follow and have it a check mark so that it auto downloads.
And I'm glad you mentioned that because it kind of helped me lead in so I didn't have to have a long, awful explanation about auto downloads. And they went away for the summer because Apple had a small bug and a lot of podcasts weren't auto downloading. That led to a little drop for a lot of people. And I thought to myself, I hope they don't bring it back because it seems to be if we don't auto download, we would wind up with a more real podcast metric than if it did.
Yeah. And it wasn't breaking it where it didn't auto download at all. It was breaking it where it didn't auto download if you didn't listen to the most recent episodes. In the past, it was it didn't auto download if you hadn't listened to 5 episodes in a row. And that's changed it to if you hadn't listened to an episode since the last one downloaded. So it made the number more accurate. You're correct. The break was unfortunately for some people, it hurt their numbers. Now, where it hurt people the most are people that were releasing episodes 5 days a week, multiple days, 7 days a week. Those people, 3 times in a day, those people saw a hit because people actually had to go and listen to an episode and then it would auto download the next one. So that's where it took a hit. But Apple did put it back to its previous actions with iOS 14.7 and 14.8 and now iOS 15. So it is back to how it used to work prior to iOS 14.5. But yeah, with 14.6 is when it broke it. We saw the numbers on some shows dropping 20, 25%. Overall, it wasn't that big a drop for all shows. And some shows that were releasing every other week didn't even see any impact on their numbers because by the time the next episode came out, people had listened to it. You know, people said, well, I didn't see a drop in my numbers. I'm like, good for you. You got an active audience. And other people are like, I saw a huge drop. And I'm like, you might want to try to reconnect with your audience.
That's exactly what I found. The podcasters that marketed well and stayed on top of their audience did not see a drop. Those who were not active and promoting their podcasts on a regular basis saw the drop.
I agree with you. It was a more accurate representation of your audience. And so it's unbroke and less accurate now. But it's back to where it was. And again, it wasn't all shows and it wasn't a huge number. And even in the biggest part of the drop, Apple Podcasts app, which is really what it affected, went from 40% of our downloads to about 36% of our downloads. It wasn't huge, a number. Now they're back up to where they were before.
Another myth that you needed to debunk, and I think we've done a good job with this one. And that's the average length of a podcast being sort of around, yeah, and as you're squinting, yeah, it makes you cringe. This idea that it should sort of match commuter time between 22 and 28 minutes, it still pops up there, but there's really no correct answer to how long a podcast should be.
Right. What do you have content for? That's the real answer. But when you actually look at the most popular podcasts, they do tend to be longer. What we saw was around 80% of the shows in the top 200 were 40 minutes or longer. So that goes against what a lot of people are saying. Only 6% were 22 minutes or shorter in the top 200. So the most popular podcasts tend to be longer, but that doesn't mean making a show longer will make it popular. It just means that people in podcast world don't really care about the length. They just care about the content. And if it's good content, regardless of the length, it'll do well. Unfortunately, a lot of people think there's some magic marketing bullets you can follow that's going to cause your show to grow. Haven't seen that. Word of mouth marketing, great content, getting your audience to trust you and believe in you and tell their friends about you. That's what works in podcasting.
You know what I love about podcast movement and going every year is there's always one or two things that somebody will say that will make me pivot completely. And I love waking up every morning to the future. Podcasting is the future. And for years, I sort of resisted YouTube, did not feel the need to put up a still image in a show. You know, who's consuming it? And you showed up with some interesting information that made me change my mind this year that said, you know, maybe we should have a still image of the show we're doing right now. We'll put it up on YouTube because there is searchability and value in it.
Right. And a lot of times when we tell people, hey, you should put up an episode with a still image in YouTube, they go, oh, well, my show's an hour long and my audience in YouTube is used to 5-minute videos. I'm like, did you know that Gmail accounts are free and you can register a new Gmail account for your still image videos? And you can upload to that Gmail account and not annoy your 5-minute video audience. And that's what we recommend. And, you know, Libsyn will convert your audio to the video automatically and upload it to YouTube. And that's what I do. I don't upload it to my videos where I'm going to do my unboxing videos and other active videos. I upload it to a different account so I don't annoy my YouTube audience with these still images. And people go, why even bother doing that? And as you mentioned, it's search, it's SEO. I mean, YouTube is the number two search engine in the world. And Google is making changes, you know, in the future. YouTube, when you do a search in YouTube, if it doesn't find something in YouTube, it's now going to go over to find stuff in Google, which means YouTube and Google are training YouTube users not to go Google things. They're training YouTubers to YouTube things. YouTuber, YouTube searched for things inside YouTube. So having your podcast in YouTube is going to be even more relevant in the future once Google makes those changes. So, you know, get it in there. And you never know when you're going to have a show pop. I did an interview a while back with Aaron Mankey, and I put it up and for Podcast 411. And when Lore got picked up by Amazon Prime, or was it Amazon Video, or Amazon TV, whatever it is, and they were making it into a TV show, and everyone, who's this Aaron Mankey guy? And they went into YouTube searching for interviews with him, and I had the one interview in there, and I had like 35,000-50,000 views in a month, 2 months, because I just put it in YouTube. Now, much more than I got on the RSS feed.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that. And, you know, Google for podcasters now, when we go in there, we can see who's searching and how people are connecting to audiences. And no surprise, it's the people who are being searched out in Google who connect to your podcast that way, which kind of leads me now into the next part, and that's websites. And having a website for your podcast and the importance of it. 80% of the people who come to me say, how do I make my podcast better? I'm like, just focus on your website, because a lot of them are a mess. So what makes a good podcast website?
Well, one, having one. And here's what I would say. Making it easy when they find your website to listen to your podcast on the website and to subscribe to your podcast from the website. So in other words, having a link to your podcast in Apple Podcast, having a link to your podcast in Spotify, having a link to your podcast in Google Podcast, which are the, you know, three biggest places people consume. If your podcast is also what you're going to think more iOS related, make sure you have a link to Overcast, since Overcast is one of the top fourth place. So having links on your website to key places where people consume. So once they do hit play, they like it, they can just go and click that button, take them to the aggregator app of their choice, and then subscribe to your podcast. So for me, what makes a good podcast website is a player that shows your most recent episode clearly, easily able to click play, and then if they like it, easily able to subscribe or follow your show depending on which service they use. And then you have to have the optimization tags. And Google, by the way, defines a good website as one where your RSS feed website link points to that website, and in your website metadata, you point to your RSS feed. So Google Podcast actually looks for your website to point to your RSS feed and your RSS feed to point to your website.
Thank you, by the way, for being podcast therapist for so many people every 2 weeks on the feed. And a lot of people love to listen to the stats that you present. And another big question everybody asks me is how well is my podcast doing? And there's Rob and Elsie every 2 weeks with the numbers, and the number 127 pops up. So if you get 127 downloads or thereabouts after 30 days, you've eclipsed half the podcasts out there.
And that's based on shows that host with Libsyn, which all our shows are paid hosts, are paid shows, and they're more serious. But if you're getting 127, say 130, just to round it up, if you're more than 130, you're better than half the shows that host on Libsyn. And again, our numbers tend to skew higher out there. And don't use them numbers that are in listen notes, because they count all 2.4 million. So that really is like, everybody's like, hey, I'm in the 1%. No, not really. And really, the number that most people care about, if you want to monetize through advertising, is you want to get to about 5,000 per episode. And that's on Libsyn. It's about 6.5 to 7% of our audience or our podcasts get to that 5,000 number. But that's not the only way to monetize. You know, people keep wanting to say, oh, I want to monetize. That means ads. No, you can do premium. Apple's just shown, hey, they believe in premium. They just added a premium service. Spotify has it. Libsyn has it with Glow.fm. So at any level show, you can add premium. And if you're less than 1,000 downloads, premium, making some content free, some premium, is kind of the best way to monetize, sometimes the only way. People do get hung up on the numbers. And I would say this, those numbers that we give are across the board. If you have a niche podcast, let's say, you know, we have a podcast that's about chameleon breeding, you're not going to get in the 1% of shows. You're not going to get 35, 50,000 downloads an episode, because it's, you know, it's very niche. So you have to look at what your topic's about. And if you get 200 to 500 downloads for a very niche topic, that's a good size audience. You know, we talked about podcast movement. That room had 225 people in it. Getting a room that size every week, week after week, it's not a small deal.
Rob's going to tell us more about attribution and why you can't get all those crazy data points that radio station ratings and Google and Facebook throw at you, and why we may be getting less in the future, and why that's a good thing. Also, if you've been following podnews.net, lots of people appear to be frustrated with the Apple Podcast app. We're going to tell you what the hosts of the feed use to listen to podcasts and why. But if you really want, you can always get that information over at the episode page at soundoffpodcast.com, where I loaded the page up with a whole bunch of stats about our organization, the Sound Off Media Company, and as well a few things about this podcast.
25 catalogs, over 2,000 albums, 61,000 songs, 197,000 tracks. Megatrax has everything you need to create the perfect sounds for your station, podcast, or digital program. Our flagship catalog, Megatrax, has hundreds of albums covering a huge array of genres and styles. Deep East Music and No Sheet Music deliver international sounds straight out of London. Sensacion brings an authentic Latin flair to every album and is recorded live by local musicians. Megatrax also has a huge collection of FFX, sound design, and narration mixes to give you full creative freedom to make any type of production imaginable. Head on over to megatrax.com or call us at 818-255-7100 for your music licensing requests. That's megatrax.com.
Just before we start the show, I want to thank Dave Jackson from the School of Podcasting for sending us a boost. He sent us 2112 sats. I guess he's a Rush fan. And he thanked us for the episode we did with Mark Asquith from Captivate. He says, great interview with Mark. Love that guy. Dave, by the way, is using Cast-O-Matic to pass around Satoshis on the internet to other podcasters. We like that. A lot.
The Sound Off Podcast.
Libsyn made a nice purchase earlier this year with the acquisition of Glow.fm. And I should point out, you don't need to be a Libsyn user to use Glow.fm and monetize content.
You know, Libsyn was the first podcast hosting company, started almost 17 years ago, November 2004. And it's been the place to make it really easy to get a podcast out there. And to get a podcast out there, you need to have a place that hosts your media files and a place that manages your RSS feed. And that's what Libsyn's concentrated on, along with getting you back accurate statistics. You know, that's the other thing. You know, we say people use our service for one to two reasons. One, to upload their content. And we always had MyLibsyn, or we've had MyLibsyn for many years, which is another premium offering. So we actually have two different premium offerings. But the glow.fm one is for shows of any size. You're just starting. You don't have an audience. You know, you have 10 downloads to the largest shows. Dan Carlin's now using glow.fm. So we've got you know, shows of all sizes using glow.fm, which is a nice solution that allows you to put it into any aggregator app that allows an RSS feed to be added manually, which includes Apple Podcast, which includes Google Podcast, and Spotify is also, we're working with them to have that in there as well.
A lot of radio people, generally the salespeople, will ask me, is there a way you can find out who's listening to your podcast? Can you get demographics like adults 25, 54, male or female? What's available to for podcasters in terms of data?
Right now, ethically, the only place you can get that information is Spotify. Spotify does give you that information as a podcaster in your stats. Apple does not, will not give you that information. They're a little more protective on the privacy rights of the listeners. But, you know, podcasting, there's no place for listeners to opt in to share their demographic information. So when you're listening in Apple Podcasts or many other the aggregator apps, they don't have a place where you can opt in. Spotify does have a place where people sign up for Spotify saying they can use your information. So that's why Spotify is able to give it. But from all the other aggregator apps, there's no opt-in for the listeners to say, yes, you can share my demographic information. And gathering information from listeners where they don't opt in is unethical. And in some countries, just illegal.
One of the things that I really enjoy about podcasting is it's very simple when it comes to the data. You get an IP address and you get a little bit of information about the user agent. And from that, it's actually a lot of information that you can use to build your audience for your podcast. And now I'm beginning to hear that the IP address might go away. So what's a guy like me to do?
Well, you know, if you look at the writing on the wall and you look at what Apple has said and what Apple's done with regards to IP address, it doesn't look good for the future of IP addresses being available for any applications, for any services on the iOS side. In WWDC and back in June, Apple announced new rollouts, improvements for the iOS platform. And the first thing they showed was IP address being blocked for mail. So now when people open up mail, the IP address is blocked from all those mail services. And then they went on and then they talked about Private Relay and Safari and that they're going to block IP addresses with that as well. So Apple came out right out of the gate and said, hey, for mail and for Safari, we're going to block this. And HTTP requests, they block IP address too. So if you look at what Apple said and you look at what Tim Cook has said, it doesn't take a lot to connect the dots and realize that IP addresses probably are not going to be available for any applications, including Apple Podcasts or any podcast app in the iOS platform, even including Spotify for that matter. So, you know, going forward with maybe iOS 16 or some point in the future, Apple is going to do that. And that has a lot to do with the fact that people have been abusing IP addresses in many spaces and many platforms, but in the podcast space as well. And I have to say this, you know, some people say that IP addresses aren't personal information, but it is, you know, and it really doesn't matter because Apple is saying it is, you know, and Apple controls 80% of the mobile downloads. GDPR says IP addresses are private information. Claritas, the biggest digital advertiser, says IP addresses alone are personal information. You know, there's some people out there that want to debate that. It's not a debate. It is personal information. Apple said it. GDPR says it. So Europe says it. Brazil says it. California says it. There's not a debate here.
Does that mean that in the future, I'm not going to be able to see the number of downloads I got, say, in India or Philippines?
It will depend. Right now, what we're seeing with Private Relay when it's turned on, Apple is giving a hash geo information that should allow us to know how many you're getting from different countries and even states. So there should be some geographic information that's still available. What will be more difficult, which will be the issue in podcast land, is IAB stats are based on unique IP address user agent combos in a 24-hour window or calendar day, depending on how people parse it. But in any case, if we lose the IP address, the IAB stats kind of get borked.
I just want to retain my number one ranking in Nigeria.
Well, yeah, you know, I think people try to dismiss the IP address information. They go, oh, well, private relay was turned. It wasn't turned on by default in iOS 15. Apple didn't turn it on by default yet. They had it on by default initially in the beta. Then they turned it off. They call it a beta. They call the private relay a beta. At some point, it'll come out of beta. And when it comes out of beta, it will be turned on by default for all the iCloud Plus users, which is a lot. And people go, well, you know, there's not that many people that use websites and that. But, you know, at some point, it's going to go beyond Safari and mobile Safari. And it's going to go to the iOS platform completely. So all applications. I just don't see Tim Cook putting out a tweet that says, we believe that people's personal information should be protected and private, and they have a humanistic right for that, unless they listen to a podcast. And then all bets are off.
Is it possible to have more attribution and not violate privacy? Is this really just about opting in?
It's about opting in. You know, that's at the end of the day, it's about opting in. That's what Tim Cook, I'm just going by what Tim Cook says. You know, Tim Cook, you know, in his mind is, and this is GDPR as well, they're okay with you tracking listeners, processing listeners' personal information, as long as those people had the ability to opt in to said processing of their personal information. That's what Apple's saying. You know, we don't mind advertisers tracking users as long as the users were able to opt into that. That's where Facebook, you know, let's talk about Apple and Facebook. That's where Facebook was freaking out because they were afraid that people aren't going to opt in to allow Facebook to do all the creepy tracking stuff that they do. And you know, Tim Cook and Apple are saying, look, we just want people to be able to opt in. And that's what Apple does with App Tracking Transparency, ATT. It's about you opting in at each app to have your personal information tracked. And I just, at some point, that's going to flow across all applications in Apple Podcasts, including Apple Podcasts and all other podcast apps. It's just, you look at the writing on the wall. It's just easy to see that this is where we're going to. And I don't understand how some people can't see this clearly. It's like, look at what Tim Cook said. Look at what Apple has done. The first thing they mentioned was IP addresses. It's pretty clear where we're going.
My advice to podcasters would be to build a community. Just build your community of people, places, and things. You'll always have your community to fall back on, regardless of all this, of all the IP stuff that you're hearing and stuff like that.
And the best attribution in the podcast space has always been a DR, what the DR team have done out there in the podcast space. And that's giving you a promo code that's trackable back to a show. That's the best attribution.
One of the things about those stats that you give in the feed that I really like is matching those numbers up with my organization and seeing that the user agents that, you know, that Libsyn users are using really are similar to mine. You know, that Apple, a lot of people, Apple's at the top, and then we're going to get into Spotify after that. And then maybe there's some Google and then some Overcast. And, you know, we filter on down to, you know, around number 10, which is iHeart and Stitcher's in there as well. It seems to match. And then I hear from Buzzsprout that Spotify is number one. So someone's not counting properly.
Well, you know, Buzzsprout and I think and Spreaker are the only two that have Spotify up there. Everybody else, all the other podcast hosts, when you talk with them, they have Spotify anywhere between 7% on the low to 16% on the high. So you have to take that, you know, with a grain of salt. Now, Buzzsprout podcasts overall aren't as popular as, say, podcasts on Libsyn. The average podcast on Libsyn gets 8 times more downloads than the average podcast on Buzzsprout. You know, and I mentioned in Podcast Movement, Joe Rogan in October of last year had more downloads than all the Buzzsprout podcasts combined. You know, Buzzsprout may have a lot of shows, but overall they don't have a lot of downloads. So maybe that's just something to do with shows that don't have a lot of downloads and they push them Spotify. But overall, when you talk to the bigger podcast hosts as far as download numbers, I haven't talked to anyone other than Buzzsprout or I've heard from Buzzsprout or Spreaker where Spotify was anything more than 16%. And again, many were down in the 7-10% for Spotify. And even when Apple had borked with iOS 14.6 or corrected with iOS 14.6, Spotify was still only on Libsyn's side 15%. You have to understand that the eMarketer report and some of these other ones saying that Spotify is going to pass Apple, just not what we're seeing at all. And when you ask eMarketer where they got their information from, their answer starts out with, "We get it from thousands of data points," which is another way of saying, well, we asked some folks and we really don't know. You know, we base our numbers on what people actually did. And when we look across the hundreds of millions of downloads we get every month, we see at Libsyn, Spotify clearly in second place, solid second place, which is great, but second place nonetheless, and Apple in a clearly number one place where the Apple ecosystem's around 60% for Apple, iTunes, and you know, the whole Apple ecosystem there, Apple Podcasts and iTunes. And then when we get down to Spotify, Spotify is down in the 15% range for Libsyn, which is really still good because number three is Google Podcasts at 2.6%. You know, I am still of the belief that if Google Podcast ever becomes native, Google Podcast will become the number two podcast agent and Spotify will move into the third place. I believe native wins. You know, people are lazy. IT teams lock phones down, don't let you install things. Native tends to win at the end of the day. And then below Google Podcast, then you've got Overcast, which is only iOS at 2%. And then a few more right around 1%. iHeartRadio just moved into the 1% group, you know, so that in our August numbers, they hit 1.00%. So iHeart, I guess they always say they're number one. Now they're 1%. So I guess there's where the one comes from.
When iHeart says they're number one for podcasting, they really mean publishing. They don't mean apps.
Yeah, and they're not really number one. If you want to talk about podcasting and downloads all time, Libsyn's number one. Libsyn's had more downloads than anyone else. There's been four podcasts that have ever hit 1 billion downloads, two of them hosted on Libsyn. Right, Joe Rogan and Dave Ramsey are the two that host on Libsyn. The other two that made it to the 1 billion mark, How Stuff Works and The Daily. But Joe Rogan was the first one to a billion, not How Stuff Works. It was Joe Rogan. And when How Stuff Works got to a billion, Joe was already past 2 billion. And Joe's the only one to get over 4 billion. And again, did that on Libsyn. Now he's over on Spotify, but he did the first 4.5 billion with Libsyn.
Your co-host, Elsie Escobar, she loves the Castro app. I'm going to guess you use Overcast.
I do. Matter of fact, I don't just say it. I mean, here, I'll show you so you can see on screen what's in the bottom, what's on my dock. Right, that's my dock. Overcast is in my dock. It's in my dock with, so my dock apps are Mail, Safari, the phone, and Overcast. Now, I do have Apple Podcasts on my home screen, my first screen. So those are the two I use the most.
I bought the full subscription for Overcast. It's, I think it was $12.95 Canadian or something like that. I bought it a year ago. It's coming up again, so I better hit renew.
Overcast does the best job of speeding up apps, and so the voice doesn't sound sped up. What he does there, he crunches it down. I really like how that works. It doesn't make it sound like the person's on speed when they're talking, and he crunches out the dead air in there. So I like to listen to podcasts not at 1x. I like to listen at them a little faster so I can get through more podcasts.
How much money is there in podcasting? Because your last slide was pretty awesome. I mean, here it is. There's this huge rush to podcasting. This is sold for $1 billion. How Stuff Works was sold for 50, and Gimlet sold for 50 million. And
oh, no, 225 million was Gimlet. Yeah, the irony was when Gimlet sold for 200 and something, 225, 250 million, whatever the number, exact number was, that month, Joe Rogan had six times more downloads for his show than all the Gimlet podcasts in that network combined. Gimlet, not such a good acquisition for Spotify, number-wise and union issue-wise, right? The reports out of that. Rogan deal, that's the best deal that Spotify did, without a doubt. Bringing in Rogan, Call Her Daddy, exclusive, Barstool, bringing those in. I think those are the three deals that Spotify did that were definitely beneficial to Spotify. Not so beneficial for the listeners overall in the world. But and maybe long-term not so beneficial for Rogan other than monetarily, because people are already saying that, hey, his influence is slipping. Shocker. Who could have seen that? Restrict where a show can be consumed and influence goes down. We never heard about that, right, Howard Stern? But for Spotify, the Rogan deal was pretty good deal. Now, money-wise, when we actually talk about podcasts, the slide you're talking about, I compared the amount of advertising revenue that CBS got for the Super Bowl, which was over $500 million in 4.5 hours, one event. The 6 months prior to that, the entire podcast industry was under $500 million, 400 and something million. So putting that in perspective, the entire podcast industry is equal to 2 Super Bowls. That's it. 9 hours of football and pregame.
In radio terms, by the way, radio is $17 billion and podcasting is $1 billion.
If we get to $1 billion. That was a projection. Hopefully we'll get there this year. That, you know, that's, we're hoping to get to $1 billion this year.
Did the pandemic put a crimp in that?
Yeah. And you know, people keep comparing podcasting to radio. And I sometimes that's not the best comparison. Podcasting is more equivalent in my mind to magazines than it is to radio. You know, podcasting isn't local. A lot of that radio revenue you talk about is local. It's hard to do that in podcasting, to get any mass for shows. You have to network things together and then throw it in, and it's not live. So you don't know when people are going to listen to it. So podcasting is more niche based, and that's where I equate it to more to magazines. And then there's, and a lot of podcasts, I should say, make money outside of advertising. They make money through content, using it as a content marketing vehicle. You know, Trader Joe's, Google has podcasts, Microsoft has podcasts, Oracle has podcasts. Even the New York Fed and New York Stock Exchange have podcasts. These folks are doing it as content marketing outreach. And that's where a lot of the podcasts, the majority of podcasts, are using the podcasting medium that way. Unfortunately, a lot of people think all podcasts are in it for advertising. No, most are actually not in it for advertising. People look at all the numbers and go, oh, well, if we monetize all of this, well, you can't monetize all of it. Big podcasts like Joyce Meyer, she's not in it for advertising. She's in it to promote her books, promote her services, seminars, or webinars, and live events when she goes back to having them. But she's not in it to promote Harry's Razors. Or any other product for that matter.
Amen. You know, I started this podcast 6 years ago. I know if I stop it, my business is going to go down the toilet.
Well, you know, businesses are the best podcasters because they have an opportunity to connect with their core audience in a very intimate medium. You know, you're listening through the earbuds. You're literally getting in the middle of your head of your listeners. It's a wonderful medium for that. And more businesses need to be doing it. And we are seeing it. I mean, I just saw Home Depot has a podcast. You know, a lot of the big businesses now have podcasts, and some of them are really good if they're produced and run by those businesses. eBay for Business podcast is just for sellers. It's really well done. I think where sometimes people make mistakes on the business side is they try to make it like GE did. They try to make it this theater of the mind and something else is not even related to their product. And they give it off to some production company in New York City and spend way too much money for something that they get no benefit from. Find someone in your company that really is passionate about your company. Find someone like you, Matt, that can help them edit and produce and release and get some advice. But that's all that's all companies need is just someone to give them some advice and a little production work. And that's it.
Rob, thanks so much for taking the time to be on the podcast. You're a beacon of information for people in radio and broadcast, for those who want to move in the direction of podcasting. Thank you.
And anyone has any questions, email me, rob@libsyn.com, rob@libsyn, LIBSYN.com. And Matt, thank you so much for having me on.
The Sound Off podcast is written and hosted by Matt Kundle, produced by Evan Serminski, social media by Courtney Krebsbach, another great creation from the Sound Off Media Company, imaging courtesy Core Image Studios. There's always more at soundoffpodcast.com.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all had.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
It's said that the more time you have to invest, the greater the return. Well, guess what? Kids have the most time if we learn to invest early. That's why I created the Cash Kid Podcast, where I teach kids and some adults financial skills they need to know on how to earn, save, and invest their money. Join me on this journey as we interview experts and explore topics that allow you to grow your money as kids. This podcast will help you become the money expert among your family and friends. Just remember, anyone can be a cash kid. You just have to learn how to become one. Get ready to grow your financial knowledge and your wallet with the Cash Kid Podcast.